Today on Talk About That, I scold John for running on empty and attempt to impress a girl with popcorn. Meanwhile, John calls me a Grinch and proposes a permanent holiday tree. Also, conversation on hustle, burnout, and the balance between chasing opportunities or letting them come to you. Today's episode is not sponsored by Christmas cookie tins. The cookies are gone. This is where your mom keeps her sewing stuff now. Let's get into it.
The holiday spirit is in the air, Johnny. Let's talk about that.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
It's not even December yet, and I am forcing Christmas vibes to happen already.
Are you listening to Christmas music already?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. Sadie and I and Laura, we're all listening to Christmas music. I turn it on in the house via the Bluetooth thingy that I have.
What do you have?
I have a sound bar that I can Bluetooth to.
Oh, I see. So, yeah. So you have to use your phone.
Yeah.
Because I was telling you there's a new device that Apple has, which I think Amazon has one similar, where they have it connected to your Amazon Music account.
Yeah.
But this is connected to Apple Music, which I have. And you just can say, like, play Rascal Flatts, and it just starts.
But is it really taking you that much trouble to just have to go find Rascal Flatts?
Well, it's like,
like, what else does it do for you that you can't already do with
I think you can ask it questions for the internet and things,
you know,
too.
You could just take your phone and go play Rascal Flatts through a Bluetooth.
I think it's because we grew up on those shows. Our generation grew up on shows where, like, a random sci-fi world would be, and a guy would go, computer,
yeah,
find me the latest statistics on whatever. And they'd be like, beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop, boop. And it would start spitting out data. And we need that satisfaction of that moment.
Like, to just fulfill the childhood dream of what technology could be.
It's like, remember when we thought we would all be eating, like, pills instead of food?
You don't eat pills as food?
Well, yeah, when you get older, that really is what you do, I guess. But, you know, we thought, I knew it would never be because I was like, no, we love eating too much. We're not going to be like, oh, this is like a steak dinner in this capsule. I was like, no, but I want the steak dinner.
Right. I don't need efficiency here. I need enjoyment.
And I knew flying cars wouldn't happen.
Johnny,
because it just doesn't make any sense.
It's not over, man. Have some hope.
But think about it, okay?
Right, how are we all going to navigate? There's no
right,
shoulder of the road.
Yeah, if you have a fender bender, you die. Like, you plummet to the earth, you know? It's like, oh, dinged you. Like, it's not that.
Well, if you run out of gas, you plummet to the earth.
Run out of gas, you die.
Yeah.
So and you're one of those guys that, like, runs it. You run pretty hot. You run to the slash.
Not anymore, not much.
Every time I've ever gotten in your car with you, I look over and you're like, no. I go, dude, what are you doing? It's like your yellow get fuel now or else lies on.
Yeah.
What's hurt us, though, is the thing that tells you exactly how many miles you have.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, dude, I got 20 more miles.
Yeah.
It's fine. It saved me.
So, you know, we talked about this before, but my GMC Terrain, which I've sold or traded in.
Not a sponsor.
No, yeah, definitely not a sponsor. My Terrain was an okay car, but it was nothing but trouble in this aspect. When it said low fuel, you were about to run out of gas.
Yeah.
And it would say 40 miles to empty. But I ran out of gas twice on a date with my wife. I would just be like, and I would have to, like, have her help me push it to a station, or we'd have to wait for it. One day we would wait for you. You had to come bring me gas.
You went on that many dates with your wife?
We believe in it, John. We just.
Two? No, I live in, before those, the technology that told you.
Yeah.
Like, there's something thrilling about it, bro.
I guess it is.
We can make the next exit. We can do it.
I don't think women do that. And I don't want to, like, divide gender roles, but I just do. We've talked about before.
Well, you know a lot about women.
That I do believe that, like, women don't have the same thing in them that, like, I think we talked about the video of the kid hitting the trash can button and making the metal lid hit himself in the head and laughing to the other boy.
Yeah.
It's like, I've never seen a video of girls doing that.
Yeah.
Every skateboarder, like, there's always, like, a few female skateboarders on these videos, but it's almost always guys going, like, I want to do a triple flip down
onto
this rail.
My crotch.
Right.
Right.
And it's just, that's a thing. So it's like, yeah, I do think that, I wonder if there are women out there, and maybe they could just give us feedback in Twitter or something, like, do you like running it past the slash? It's not just laziness. It's like, yeah, it's an edgy, like you have money in your wallet to pay for the gas. And you have time to stop to get the gas. It's not just about, like, oh, I run so crazy. My life's so insane.
No, that's what I convince myself it is. That's what I'm doing. It's like, you know what?
I get it if it's cold, because it was cold today and I needed gas.
Yeah.
And I was like, ugh. Mm. But it's not going to get any warmer today.
Man, that'll preach. Come on, guys.
Some of y'all running out of fuel.
It's not going to be any warmer than it is right now.
You're running on empty. Get to this altar.
I was talking with someone the other day who does not come from our background, and he's a friend who's Presbyterian, and I'm like his source for, like, he asks me all these questions, like, that he's researching, like some documentaries, like, so what do you guys do with this? What do Pentecostals do? Like, he wants to know all the stuff, because it's this fascinating juxtaposition between our two childhoods and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I was telling him, like, well, the key to Pentecostalism is the altar. Like, you come to the altar.
Yeah. He was like the filling station.
Really?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. I was like, Sunday nights, bro. Like, that's the... Because you're talking about how there was something he was doing where they were praying until something happened. Or until they, you know, and I was like, yeah, oh, that's like, that's it. Like, you don't leave on Sunday night until you think...
You broke through.
Something happened. And there was a lot of good things that happened in that. I'm not poo-pooing all of it. But by the way, do you know that poo-poo? I read in like a in a huge historical biography by like a Pulitzer Prize winning author, used the word poo-poo.
Mm-hmm.
POOH-POOH.
Right.
Like, it's a real thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I just thought...
It means to be dismissive towards.
I thought
you
we were talking...
the idea.
I thought we were saying...
I poo-poo!
But didn't you always assume that poo-poo was like...
Right, poop? I don't know. He's like, you're poo-pooing the idea.
Yeah, like I'm someone's... I just always assumed that was related to poop.
Yeah.
And apparently it's not.
Huh.
And so this is how I learned to write, bro, right here. So now
there's like a really dismissive cartoon character out there named Winnie the Pooh Pooh. He's just like, I don't think so. This guy takes off his glasses and gives a condescending view of the world.
Not this time, Piglet.
Yeah.
No, I no, of course, the first thing I want to do now is go use that in an email or something.
Yeah.
And pass along. Someone's going to be like, what? He spelled it with an H.
No, I'm actually really smart. Like, yeah. That's the thing, is you run the risk of looking stupid, but really you're being smarter than the other person.
Right. And kids, this is why reading is so important, because you pick up just little tidbits and just add to your intelligence one poo-poo at a time.
I'm telling you what.
It's kind of like parenthood. There's just one poo-poo at a time.
There really is one poo-poo at a time for parenthood. Holy moly.
Ooh, dog. Did you know there's going to be a reboot of Parenthood? Did you hear about that?
No. I never really got into that show either.
What is wrong with you?
Well, I'm not a parent, so maybe that's part of it.
It's a parent.
But I do watch shows about other families and stuff.
How could you not? Did you try it?
Like, I like This Is Us, but I got to a point in This Is Us where I was like, I just don't like having a mental breakdown every week.
It is an emotional.
It just puts me. I mean, we've talked about how much of a softy I am. I'm so sensitive. So I would just be goo.
Yeah.
And then you get to think, like, do I want to watch this or do I want to watch Dumb and Dumber, where I just don't have to like do anything, or do I want something that's really like light?
Yeah.
So I would just choose after a while, like season two, season three. I was just like, This Is Us, man. You're bringing me down. You're going back now. Jack's in Vietnam, and I gotta hear this. It's like
we did that a lot. I'd come in if I had a hard day. She'd be like, we'd look at the DVR, and I go, I'm just not ready.
Yeah,
I can't do This Is Us tonight. Like, I need disengagement. Right. Like you said, it is. It's a.
What's
it's
weird
a commitment.
Is when you. What's weird is when you won't watch the 3-hour movie, but then you watch like 8 episodes of Friends in a row.
That's my Laura's like doesn't do movies. She's come to that realization.
Yeah.
But it's one of those intellectual connections that hasn't reached her emotional state. Like, she'll go, what is the problem with movies? We literally watch 3 of these hour-long episodes.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, but
yeah,
watching
you know it
movie,
in your head, but you don't know it in your heart.
Come on, guys. You can't.
I think movies are dying, though. Like, the theater is dead. It's like a faded out star that the last light has not reached Earth yet. You know, it's one of those kind of things.
Wow, that was...
You know what I'm saying? I always think about that like...
That was an incredible metaphor.
You know, when things die...
Yeah. But we don't know it yet.
We don't know it yet, but it's over. Mm. It's like when, you know, I don't know.
Like this podcast.
Yeah, like this podcast. Like, it's clearly over. But you're listening to it right now, and you just don't know it.
We were a dying star.
Yeah.
It's a very small star.
Yeah.
More like Pluto or one of the moons.
But I think COVID was like the death blow. Because it was already like people were going to movies less, and they were having to do all these things to woo you in. Like, we've got recliners now.
Right.
How about a foot massage?
How about like a monthly membership where you don't ever pay? Yeah.
Right.
How about
we'll do your nails. Like, they're just doing anything to get you in these rooms. And now then it's like, hey, come in and get COVID. Like, there was not a way that you could woo somebody. Because they were streaming these movies, too. Yeah. So they would release a movie. And then 2 days later, they go, or you could watch it on Peacock. And people were like, oh, let's do that.
I could be in my bed. Push
and
pause.
The thing is, though, I miss it. And I like the movies a lot. But it's just, you go, like, every time I've gone to the movies the past month or two, there's 2 people in there.
Yeah.
And I go, how are they sustaining this? They can't even keep a staff with this.
Yeah.
So you know it's over. But I think it's changed because what we watch now it's totally okay to do, like, they used to call it the small screen. Well, I'll shift to the small screen once my movie career's over. These stars would, like, it would be like an insult to offer somebody an HBO series. You go, well, this is a movie. I don't want to be on HBO.
Right.
Now it's like, that's what you want. It's the best quality stuff is being made into a series or a Netflix show or a Netflix movie. And they have big budgets like these Hollywood studios used to have. So I just feel like movies are over. And I don't know what to do with that because part of my nostalgia button as a kid, I'm going, well, what about going to the movies and getting your popcorn? And like, it's a bummer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I feel like Saturdays is still a lot of people there, like weekends.
I don't know, but is it enough to sustain the whole industry?
They are charging you $60 every time you walk in the door.
I can't imagine as a family. Like,
oh my gosh.
When I worked at Home Depot, I had my part-time job still at the movie theater, right? So we would work, I would work part of the day at the movie theater, then I would clock out and I would literally walk across the street, clock in at Home Depot. And I, all these friends at Home Depot, they knew, and I was, you know, 20 or whatever, they kind of knew, like, oh, Johnny works at the movie theater. And they kind of caught wind that we screen the movies Thursday nights. Like, I would put the movies together. I was a projectionist. You get, like, six individual reels of this movie. They're in pieces. And you cut off the head and the tail, the little, like, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 countdown thing that you see at the end of old movies. I would cut that off, and I would tape them together. And you have to make sure it's in the right order. And then you wind it all together. You put it on this big thing called a platter. And it would feed through the middle and go through. And instead of being a reel-to-reel, it's just laying there flat. And so that was my job. But you have to screen them on Thursday nights if a movie's opening Friday because it could be wrong. Like, I could have made a mistake. And it happens before where you go, you're watching some movie, and all of a sudden Susan Sarandon is upside down and backwards.
Wow.
And you go, ugh, I'm glad we watched this.
Yeah.
So we have to do it. But it became this big thing where all the staff, they would invite their friends, and you'd open up the soda pumps, and you just like, oh, we're all going to – it's like a thing. We're watching the movie before anybody has seen it. So my Home Depot friends, especially the ones that had kids, they were like, hey, Johnny. hey, man, you work at the movie theater still? Hey, you care if I come? I go, yeah, I can invite a few people. And they'd show up with their kids and their families and just like six kids. And you'd be like, oh, my gosh. And they go, dude, you don't know what this means. Like, for me to take my kid to this movie, like, it would have been over $100 by the time we get tickets and popcorn and – like, it's a nightmare. So they knew they could bring their own snacks without feeling bad. Because now it's gotten a lot easier to sneak in things. But if you know if you're going to a thing on Thursday night, nobody cares if you bring your own candy. So they bring bags of, like, whatever.
Isn't it? But candy tastes better in the movie theater.
Yeah.
Isn't
it those gigantic.
It's the only time
I eat. It's like the it used to be they'd be the gigantic bars, too. Like, you get the. Yeah. This is the movie-sized Snickers, you know.
Yeah.
But
it's the only time I eat Junior Mints.
Yeah.
Within the movie.
Junior Mints is weird because I like them, but it tastes weird with like a soda. Like, you get this mintiness, then you got your soda. I don't know.
Laura doesn't do mint dessert.
Or if you're doing a fruity drink, like, oof, mint and fruit. It's like the orange juice toothpaste feel.
Yeah.
Like when you brush your teeth and you go, here's some orange juice. Most gag-worthy. It's awful. But yeah, so my friends who had kids, though, they were the most grateful.
Sure.
They would be like, dude, you don't know what you just did. You saved me $150.
It is. If you want popcorn, it's going to cost you, like, it's a what, $20 ticket a piece. And then, not always. We usually hit a matinee.
We would save popcorn, like, because when you get done at the end of the night, there's always some popcorn left in the popper. And we'd bag it up in this big, like, clear trash bag.
Yeah.
And so one of us would take it home. So, I mean, I got so sick of popcorn, so I would never do it. I would just be like, throw it away. But I remember one time this girl who I was trying to, like, date, she came to the movie theater. I've been working there 4 months.
You brought
out
a trash bag of popcorn.
I knew we had one in the back. So her friends came in, and my manager was in her office. And I was just like, hey, you want some popcorn? Just take this. So she took this, like, half-full trash bag of popcorn into this theater. And she's watching. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be big for me. I'm going to get points with this girl, whatever. So then the movie ends, and it was the last movie of the night, last show of the night. So May, my manager, she would go through, and she'd always go through the flashlight trying to find, like, stuff people dropped. Yeah. Like, she wouldn't do it as a security thing. She'd be like, hey, here's a dollar, whatever. And sometimes you'd find things. And I see her. I'm looking upstairs because I'm a projectionist, and I'm looking down, and I see her flashlight, and I'm like, huh. And then she shines the flashlight into my eyes, and she's holding this bag because they just left it. They didn't, you know, so they just left it at their seat. So she knows, like, that came from us.
Right.
Like, it's not like somebody walked in with a trash bag of popcorn. She's
like, we have a leak in our department.
It is. Right. It's like, I found the mole. Like, she is upset. So I had like some fast talk, and I did I think I just told her, "Look, there's a girl came in." Yeah, she let me off the hook that day.
That's great.
We had a contentious relationship, me and that manager, but I think she gave me a little grace that night.
That's great. Yeah,
but
that's great.
That's not the way to score points with a girl, but it didn't. She never called me.
I was going to say, you gave her popcorn.
It'd be great if it was, and that was my wife. Like, but it was it's not that story.
No, she left her trash. She cared so little about you.
Right.
She
got me in trouble with my manager.
And you watched her from a distance from the projection room. Like, this was more like a stalking than it was anything.
Yeah, so, it really was. Yeah. Popcorn is not the way to the woman's heart, by the way.
No. It is the way to my wife's heart. Oh, boy.
Movie. But she already liked you. It wasn't like you were she's like, I'm on the fence about this guy.
I don't
and then
know.
Popcorn
I think the popcorn
out.
Did it.
It did. It played no small role. Yeah.
Yeah, my wife, I like to say all the important things in my life, this is one of the reasons I struggle with knowing if I'm supposed to chase after opportunities or wait for them to come, mm-hmm. because most of the big opportunities in my life or big things all called me on the phone. Like mm-hmm. I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And my wife, so like the job I work now, Andrew, just called me on the phone one day when I was in East Tennessee. We had met at an event, which I was telling that story in a podcast the other day, by the way. They asked where Reggie and I met. I was like, Reggie, I bet you don't remember. We met at Kings Island when Johnny and us and the band were doing it, and it flooded there.
Yeah, summer blast.
And he was the speaker, and we were the band. And that was now, it had to be 2000, right? 2001, somewhere around there. So 20 years ago is when we first really, you know, became friends. So that's where I met Andrew, too. And then Andrew calls, no job, just we started being this relationship thing. And then eventually the job opened up. Boom. Same thing with my wife. You and I are doing an event in Middle Tennessee. She's from Austin Peay. I'm from Tennessee. We're leading worship, meet this girl with a mutual friend, our old drummer. And I literally was like, okay, this is true. I mean, all guys say this, but this is very true. Like, I don't have a shot with this girl. I just got out of a relationship, but like this girl's, I mean, like not just out of my league. Like I'm like down in single A. She's like in, you know, major leagues. Like this is, there's a lot of levels between us. And we met, it was fine. And then like 2 weeks later, she calls me in my dorm. Like she just apparently 2 weeks later, I mean, I attribute this to God because this is the only way that girl would have wanted to date me. Like she's like, I just couldn't stop thinking about that John Driver guy. I was like, that took Jesus. And so she calls and she was like, and she's the only time she's ever lied to me that I know of. She was like, hey, I'm just calling a bunch of people from all of the, from the retreat, you know, and I was the only one, John.
Like she's following up?
Yeah. And back then, you know,
I'm just checking all the boxes here.
Actually, I think it was an email first. I got an email. Hey, I'm just emailing a few people from the fall retreat, you know, and it was just mine. And so I picked up pretty quickly that I think this girl might be interested. And so immediately I asked her out. Immediately. Run. Don't walk to the date if she'll go. So in that respect, like, I always wonder if you wait for things, should you wait for things to call?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or should you pursue things?
I never know, especially like career stuff. Like the thing, I think that I had a conversation the other day about that, about how like, I think people who kick down, people who do the thing of like, well, it never hurts to ask. Like it does hurt sometimes.
It can hurt to ask.
It can hurt to ask. Like if you have a friend who just constantly is asking for things and they feel like this, they'll respect my hustle. Like they do to a point. There's a really, it's a thin line. Like you don't
really
know.
Is.
You ride that razor blade sometimes of like, is this right? Is this wrong? I think the thing I do now, I used to feel like, do I need to kick down doors and show people that I really want to do this? Now I don't kick down doors, but I try all the knobs. You know, like see if it's your door. If the door's locked, good. But you don't know, do you try the knob? Like try the knob first. And so I definitely don't kick down doors anymore, though. Like, if somebody doesn't want... Because what happens if you kick down doors, you get in, and they go, you were edgy for us. Like, I need somebody to want me to be there.
Yeah.
Because, like, if somebody hires me, an organization hires me, a church hires me, a corporation hires me, they vetted me. There's enough clips of me on the internet. They've listened to the podcast, probably. They've done things. They know what they're getting. They're never going to be surprised. That's a good feeling to know, like, they wanted me.
Yeah.
So they're not going to... Because when you start out, you're like, should I do this thing? They know what they're getting now with me at this point. And I like that feeling. So that's just, I don't know. I don't kick down doors anymore. I try not to.
No, that's good. I mean, if you got to kick it down, there's a good chance it wasn't the right one.
I mean, it's not your door.
I don't know, though. I mean, it's weird, though. But then you get into these, there's certain opportunities that they're just so, they're so few and far between. Like,
yeah.
it's hard to know. Like,
I do think there's a skill of like putting yourself in the room where things can happen. I'm reading this book about this comedy writer named Alan Zweibel, and he would talk about how there started to be he was one of the first writers on Saturday Night Live in the first years, like, you know, 75 through 80. So he talked about how, or 77 through 82, where when these artists started getting movies, like Animal House came out,
yeah,
and it revolutionized, like, oh, Saturday Night Live people can go on to like a movie career. So all the comedy writers and the artists and the performers would end up staying late, and it became a thing of like, if I go home and Alan writes a great piece, if I'm not there, he'll just give it to Belushi, because yeah, Belushi stayed late. So people started staying late, and it became this thing of like, we're not working together anymore. It's like a competition almost. Yeah. Like, let's see. So he goes, I didn't really love that, but I understood. Like, I see people in my life, especially in comedy, that are great at putting themselves in the room.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we need a comedian. Oh, so-and-so's here. And yeah, you go, well, that's not who they really wanted. That's just, that was about availability. But then they could go on and kill it. Yeah. And then you really, really feel weird. You're like, ugh.
Is this balance between the, yeah, the stick-to-itive American bootstrap, yeah, sort of ethic, yeah, versus, yeah, dude, it's a, having that ethic comes with a cost as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I do believe that. It's when I meet someone who hustles, they only have a hustle gear.
Yeah.
It's not good usually.
And, or they think hustle is everything.
Yeah.
And they also by consequence kind of look down on people that have a balance as people who are just lazy. Like, well, look, if you got to sleep, I guess you got to sleep, but I don't sleep anymore. You know, like,
right,
like it's like a show. It's like a sign of weakness to sleep.
Yeah, it's very like, I was talking with our mutual friend, Mike Burnett, who is an Enneagram 8.
Yeah.
Okay. And 8s are often strong leaders,
mm-hmm,
and they don't want to be controlled. Healthy eights, I mean, like Laura always says, you know, a healthy eight is Martin Luther King and an unhealthy eight is Stalin. So like they're all about whatever their cause is, you know, yeah, so there's obviously a healthy and unhealthy side to both. But I told him the other day, because I'm a 6, and I was like, what I get, and I thought about this while I was praying this morning, what I get jealous of when I'm hanging out with someone like Mike and I have a few other 8 friends is their clarity.
Yeah.
They're not like paralyzed by this over analyzing of all of your motives and your, like,
right,
it's like Mike just goes, oh, this is what I do. I don't want to do this.
Right.
It's super clear.
The cause is a clarifying factor.
Yeah.
Like we had that when we started the church, and when I started working at the church, we would talk about our core values and we would run everything through that filter.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we want to do the MJ 5K race? Okay. Does it check box A, B, C? And right, we could run it through. Does this add to discipleship? Does this increase our awareness in the community? Does it blah, blah, blah? Does it bring glory to God? Does it raise money for missions? Does it? We could check those boxes and go, then we do it.
Yeah.
And if we would go through and go, should we do a comedy night? Well, if it didn't check those boxes, it would just be like, well, we need an event. We just stopped doing those things.
Yeah.
The role of it provided a clarity, knowing our cause. And so I think that's true for some people. And some churches just go, well, we do an event every month and that's just who we are. And that becomes, it becomes a core value in its own way.
Right.
They just believe in events. They believe events bring people together in the community and they can justify it. So I think there's a good balance to both things.
There is, yeah, because I'm more likely these days, in my early days, I'm more likely to do the event because I had to schedule, like, this is what we do.
Yeah.
Being, this activity will bring people closer. It gives mm-hmm. us this shared interest or shared goal, shared purpose, you know. And so then I would bring content in to follow the plan. And I'm more likely now to want the plan to follow the content.
Okay.
And so in that, you do get stuck, though, deer in the headlight a little bit sometime trying to, like, so at some point in time, someone has to say, we're going to do that.
Yeah.
You have to pull the trigger. And I will. I can analyze that to death now. Like, you know, is it really aligned? you know, and especially since COVID and the scarcity of resources causes you to really stop and go, what is valuable here? And I think that's been a gift in some ways, because in the old days, we just did everything. You just do everything, because everything, what I found from your whole core value conversation is, it's, but this is the way my brain works. I can fit every single thing that anyone ever does into the right core values.
If you massage it enough, it'll fit. Well, this technically will bring blah, blah, blah. And you go, yeah, but what about the work versus what we're getting? Is it worth this effort to do this when we could have done it with this other thing that's a smaller effort?
Yeah. And it took us a few years to figure that out. Like, hey, guys, we figured out we filled this building up for X event and we had no real conversations of noteworthiness outside of just friendliness with anyone who came. Yeah. No one came to visit the church after the fact because that's not what the event was for. And we even said that. We don't care if you come here or not.
Yeah.
But they took us seriously. So they didn't come here. You know, it's like, and that's okay. You know,
there's things like that. Like we've done, we did the thing for Trunk or Treat where like hundreds of people showed up and we couldn't believe it, right? That was like a thing where
we had thousands.
We're not a gigantic church, but like this thing happened where like, I think it was, wasn't it some happenstance where the community pushed their trick-or-treating to another day, and so we were the only thing happening.
Yeah, 1 year, like 2,000 people showed up. We were like, holy moly. We were out parking cars down the field.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, so we have things like that happen where you go, those people might all attend church, not all attend church here after this, but was it still worth doing for sure? I don't know. For me, it's like, it's so much easier to be like, okay, this is going to be a lot of effort. I start trying to justify not doing anything because it's easier to do nothing. But, you know, some things are worth doing.
Did you listen to the Mars Hill episode about the big stadium event they did in Seahawks Stadium? What's it called?
I don't know what it's called now. They named it what it was called then. No, Gillette's the Patriots.
Okay. Yeah. That was interesting. To your point, they were talking about how that event was so huge. They pulled it off in like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And they burned out. Multiple people said that. Like, they burned out multiple staff members, quite a few, dozens, who, like, never recovered in ministry.
Right.
Because they went 24 hours a day for 6 weeks for what?
To pull off this visibility event, basically.
It was Easter.
It was a big coming out party,
Yeah, he was real cheerleader. You know, it was not the same. Like, what? Just because we could, like, what is this really?
And it was
really
still only, like, a fourth full. It wasn't like filled the arena. Or filled the stadium.
It was like 20,000 people or whatever in a stadium that holds 80 or whatever. Yeah. And you just go, it felt very much like a monument unto their ability to try. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where you really get into this, is that wrong? I mean, I don't know if there's a right or a wrong there.
I don't know.
But you do have to think about the cost of people's mental health and organizational health. Like, hey, if I've asked too much of you, I always struggle with that as executive pastor, like, or with volunteers especially. Like, I'll have one of our part-time staffers, you know, or a volunteer worship person. This happened a few weeks ago. A wonderful, wonderful vocalist, Bethany, who sings with us pretty much every week, holds down the fort for us. I mean, she's a social worker. She's just an amazing person. Shows up early and just really, like, one of my favorite people to sing with. I mean, just this butter.
Oh, she's fantastic.
This butter voice, you know, just like, and she's just great. She's just a great attitude. And she was like, oh, listen, there's a thing with some friends out of town this weekend. Like, is it? And I was like, go. Yeah. Like, I want you.
Right.
I don't want this
and
to
I
be
hope
a thing.
This is worth missing heaven.
Right. Right. I mean, like, you don't come back.
Make that.
But go. Right. No. But I mean,
you've made your choice. Now go live.
You had
it.
Your reward. I hope it was worth it. But you know, you want people to. But the flip side is, it's okay to ask commitment of people. So
yeah, that's the hard part, and that's really hard about being a leader too. Because like you say, if you don't challenge somebody who's like on volunteer staff or like. I'm getting ready to do this thing for the Joe Beretta Foundation. It's like they have all these volunteers in volunteer board. And it's like if you don't give somebody something to do because you're afraid of overwhelming someone, it's like you're not giving them like a purpose.
Yeah.
You want to give somebody stuff to do because they want to feel like they're helping the cause.
Yeah.
So you have to figure out how to ride that line of like not overwhelming somebody who's working for you for free.
Yeah.
It's a really tough thing.
It is. It's a very – I know at some of the conferences I've gone to – where they do volunteer work very, very well. Of course, Andrew loves to say this. One of their things is you have to up the ask.
Up the ask.
And I don't like saying that a lot because Andrew loves just skirting right on the edge, you know. And
it's like, what was that slogan, make 7-Up yours in the 90s and 2000s?
Yeah. It's very, you know he's going to say
it. It would say make 7 on the front of the shirt and on the back would say up yours.
And you know that the visitors in the room are not going to know what you're talking about because they don't have the context and they're going to miss the K. You know what I'm saying? And I'm just like, look, no, at the volunteer event itself, sure, because they've heard that before.
Right.
But let's not in general, not in Gen Pop, let's not go saying that. So, but their point was like, people want to commit to a good cause.
That's the whole thing of like money follows passion. Like if you can show your passion about something, you can show that what you're doing really matters in the world. Like you don't ever have a hard time getting people to like flock to be a part of it. And you don't have a hard time getting people to give towards it. If you can just show with clarity that what you're doing matters and it works and you have organization, people just,
I don't know if I buy it.
I've never had all that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know.
I need those three things.
Maybe I'm not good at communicating. Like, I think I have, especially kingdom things that we communicate as pastors, and people do respond.
Yeah.
But you just, I am so on the side. I guess I've done it long enough that I know how easily it overwhelms people.
Yeah.
So trying to find, again, the eight's not worried about it. They might be, I don't know, but the ones I know in ministry are not.
Yeah.
They're just like, no, this is what we do. And I'm sitting here the whole time going, man, I sure hope Johnny is not going to, not because I want you just to quit. That's not the biggest concern is I'm shepherding also. Like, I don't want to put something on you that is detrimental to your spiritual growth or community because I overreached, you know, in that process. And so
you need to watch it.
I know. Well, you don't do anything for us, so it's fine.
Oh, right.
I mean, I asked you to play electric guitar the day. You're like, I don't think I remember how, something like that.
Wow.
I was like, geez, Johnny.
That's a dead-on impression.
No, what you said was is you sold your amp.
Yeah, I don't have gear.
You got rid of your gear.
I don't have any gear anymore.
We were a regional musical sensation.
Right.
And now you don't even have a guitar amp.
We're like the regional jet, like when you go to... Is it American? Oh, it's American Eagle.
Eagle, yeah.
Yeah, Brian Bates has a bit about that now where he says, he goes, I bought a ticket to Delta. They put me on some Delta variant. I'm flying to, he called it a Delta variant. That's so great.
That's great. Yeah, I had
we were the regional version of a popular band.
I had a meeting with a person in the music industry the other day about something else. And I was like, yeah, I was in a band, you know. And they were like, oh, because they were like, they were a manager of some major acts.
Like, oh, we would have heard of you?
In the early 2000s. They're like, anything I would have heard of? I was like, no. I said, the people we opened for, you would have heard of. But and that's crazy because back, there was a time I probably would have tried to sell us. Maybe. I mean, you know, we had this song on local Knoxville radio three times. You know what I'm saying? I would have just ended up looking like an idiot. I was like, no, you're not going to know us. So please don't go looking. So actually, I'm really proud of that one record.
I am too.
And I'm proud that you are our lead singer.
John.
Yeah. You sounded really good.
I was proud to do it.
Well, that's good.
It was an honor, sir, serving alongside you.
You should have helped me write better songs. That's the only thing I hold against you. You knew. You knew. Actually, that record was pretty good songs, but we could have even done better.
Listen, there's always a comeback.
Listen.
Bro.
I do think about, not a comeback, I think about writing music more. I still occasionally write some music.
But yeah, I wondered if what just go away. You got into books and you're like, you know what? This is better. Nothing has to rhyme. I can be as wordy as I want.
It is true. It's like all the parameters are removed there. There is a, I think, so much just busyness, like, you know. But I did an original song for worship on Sunday. Were you here Sunday?
No. Curry was, though. She said it was a great service.
I did an actual original song the last two Sundays.
They were your songs?
Yeah.
And you just snuck them in. You don't tell them.
I did.
Guys, I'm going to teach you a new one today.
No, I don't say
it. I just wrote this, and...
Well, they're old ones that they would have recognized.
Sing it with me! You get into it with the... I'm going to capo this up so high only a dog can hear it. That's what I talk about now in my comedy shows, about how, like, your worship leader has to do brand new songs every week, and he puts it in a key so high, it's like a dog whistle. It gets a big laugh, so I know it's happening in other churches.
Oh, it's absolutely happening all the time. My wife will say that. Like, I did a song, she's like, I loved worship today. But I have to sing, like, she has to go to the low octave to be with it. I was like, yeah, but if I don't go up there, I'll rag my voice out. Like, singing high now is actually, I've learned over the years, that's the way I don't lose my voice.
Huh.
Singing low is
you have to speak right after, too. Right. You got to lead for yourself.
I get real gravelly. If I get gravelly down there,
sometimes you got to lead yourself in worship.
Before you can preach.
You got to say, bless the Lord, oh my soul.
Mm. You got to.
Et cetera.
Yeah. One of those other scriptures. Yeah, I did, because we're doing a series on the Good Shepherd, so I did Goodness and Mercy, which is basically a Psalm 23 song that I wrote, because it was perfect for the day, for what I was preaching on. So, you're my shepherd, you're all that I need, you lead me to the shadows of the valley. Come on, man.
That's just plagiarism.
Yeah, it David,
just
David
like
wrote
it's
it.
Just the scripture.
No, he was like, "Goodness and mercy."
You know, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I wrote that. it felt like, yeah, I don't think.
No, I rearranged the valley.
Oh, I see.
To rhyme differently than his rhyme scheme
with so. Alley. When you're I walk my through shepherd, a dark alley,
you're my shepherd. You're all I need. You lead me through the shadows of the valley. So need and Lee. By these waters, you're restoring my soul, and goodness and mercy, follow me, goodness and mercy, follow me. It's just a kind of upbeat. And the week before that, I did Mercies, which was, that's actually one of my favorite songs I've ever written. Just, again, another psalm. Johnny, I get it, but people do it all the time. So, my pet peeve, though,
okay,
and it's not scripture, I may have said this before, or may not have, but it's worth saying again, Johnny, because it drives me crazy, and perhaps it's a judgmental thing, I don't know. My pet peeve.
Yeah.
Is when someone writes a song and decides to take the bridge and just throw the words and melody to Amazing Grace in.
Oh,
that they
right.
just go sing Amazing Grace in the middle of a song about another song. It's like oh, this is how I'll get people to do my song, because everyone
you draw them in to
loves
it.
Amazing
like
Grace.
It's like a nostalgia tornado in the middle of your song.
Yeah, but if you go through and look at the number of CCM songs that have basically a reference to Amazing Grace in the middle, Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound, the saved wretch like me, I don't want to hear that in your song. If I want to sing Amazing Grace, Johnny,
I'll sing
Amazing Grace. But it's just like that's just lazy writing at that point for me.
Yeah, I can't do that with a joke. I can't be like in the middle of my joke and be like, take my wife, please. That's Henny Youngman.
Yeah.
You can't.
Wait, that wasn't Rodney Dangerfield?
No. Rodney Dangerfield was like, get no respect.
I thought he did that one too.
No, Henny Youngman, take my wife, please.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I was listening to an old Henny Youngman bit. He's like one of the original like one-liner comics.
Yeah.
He'd carry a violin on stage, but he would never really play it. Like, he's a fascinating guy. Just hold it. And, but he did this bit. He said, I called this law firm the other day, Fitzpatrick. And I said, she says, hello. I says, Mr. Fitzpatrick. And she says, he's golfing. Okay. Can I speak to Mr. Fitzpatrick, please? He's actually on a date with his wife. He'll be back in about an hour and a half. Okay, Mr. Fitzpatrick, is he? Well, he's actually in court right now. All right, let me speak to Mr. Fitzpatrick. He said, speaking. I don't know. I just like old jokes like that. It's just such a funny, dumb joke structure.
I like that.
But yeah, but anyway, I can't do that. I can't do, like, we used to talk about that, but you should be able to have cover artists, like tribute artists for comedy.
Yeah.
Or if I want to do a Mitch Hedberg set, I just go do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's stealing.
Maybe as long as you...
But if I do a Bruce Springsteen... You know, song
it's
in my
cover.
Set is it's like, oh, this is cool. He's doing
you
Born
need to
Run.
Do comedy covers. You
I want to do my version of Richard Pryor.
You need to promote the show that way.
Yeah. Well, there's people who've done it. There's people who've done that.
Yeah.
Like on our scene in Nashville, they did it one Halloween where people dressed up. Like somebody did Joan Rivers, somebody did Richard Pryor, somebody did Mitch Hedberg.
Wow.
I wanted to do a show where it went really Halloween though, and you did like zombie versions. So you'd have like Mitch Hedberg. He would come out like white face and, you know, blackened eyes and just like.
You love repurposing Halloween into other names. Like, there's things we can't talk about on the air.
Yeah.
We did an event one time for our old denomination we were hosting.
I don't know where you're going. I don't remember this.
Yes, you do.
Oh, okay.
We took all the leaders of our old denomination and redid their names with logos.
That's right.
We could use Terry Allen. He wouldn't mind.
Oh, that's right. I did
Scary Allen.
No, it was Harry. Harry Allen.
Oh, Harry Allen. Sorry. And he was a werewolf.
Yeah.
And we took all the guys. Who was Andrew?
Andrew, I can't. Oh, he was Handrew, and we made him like just a hand. He was just a hand, like a living hand.
And one of the major churches in Nashville was called Cornerstone.
Right.
And you called it
Coroner Stone.
Cornerstone.
And we had like a huge hearse with their logo on the side of it.
But like we took shots at every single one of the leaders that night, and they loved it.
Some of them.
They all loved it, I think.
Yeah.
Some of them asked us for the logos, I think.
One
of the guys used that on his profile or something for a while, I thought. But yeah, you. If you're going to make me into a zombie version, what would it be, I wonder?
You know, I don't know. John.
My name doesn't have anything.
It doesn't have anything that you could play off of.
Yeah, that we know of. Yeah. I mean, a real comedian would probably come up with something. That's a challenge.
That's hurtful.
No, it was meant to drive you forward.
I don't like being put on the spot like this.
Give me a dollar.
But yeah, it's like, and Halloween's now, you know, because we had a question, right, from our guy about, because Halloween ends October 31st.
Yeah.
November 1st, people start putting out their Christmas decorations now.
It's as if Thanksgiving doesn't exist for...
We totally gloss over it. And I think it's because there's no... I have a thing in my... A theory that it's about... There's no songs. There's no Thanksgiving songs.
Ah.
So people go, well, where can we go? You know.
Are there Halloween songs?
Well, you got Monster Mash.
Can you name another? There's no... Halloween is not thing, though, built around music.
Somebody tweeted this, and maybe I said this on an episode last year, but it was the tweet said, hey, I'm getting ready to blow your mind. You've never heard Monster Mash. You've heard a song about Monster Mash. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's right. Because if you remember, it's like middle of the night. And then it says, they played the mash.
The Monster Mash.
They played the Monster Mash.
Wow.
It was a graveyard smash. So the song Monster Mash is about
the song,
the Monster Mash. It's very meta. Wow. So it's like, wait, it's like Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah.
You know, but he's not Frankenstein. Frankenstein was the doctor.
Right.
It was Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah.
So,
guys,
what was his name? We don't know.
Shelley.
He's sensitive about it. Yeah.
So,
anyway, yeah, so the Halloween ends, boom, we go straight to Christmas song. You're one of those guys.
We did fall decoration.
You give a week where you put out some gourds.
Actually, I want to say fall decoration was, we don't do Halloween decorating.
I did a show 2 weeks ago in Minnesota, and I show up to the stage, and they have, and I didn't want to say anything because sometimes you're like, can you move this pulpit? Because they'll still have their pulpit set up. And I'm like, I don't need to, it's like a day I'm standing behind it. Ladies and gentlemen, like I'm not giving a speech. So they'll go, oh, we'll move it. But I showed up and they've got this huge fall harvest setting. It's right in front of where I'm standing. It's so many things like Indian corn stalks and 80 pumpkins.
Horns of plenty.
Yeah. And I'm like, this is a lot. So I had to like mention it. Because I'm like, guys, this was on my rider. I said there had to be no less than 18 gourds. And they nailed it. You know, they got it. So I didn't think they could do it. I had to bring some outside gourds. We had to go to a farmer's market. It was too many. It was almost distracting. Like, well, you couldn't see. Like, my knees down were covered by... It was like I was on an episode
harvest
of... It was like on an episode of Hee-Haw. I was popping out of the cornfield. But yeah, so you had fall decorations for a bit, and then you move straight, you transition.
Well, again, we had the tree, which we, you know, we had.
Oh, the fall tree, the harvest.
Fall tree. So now we've
taken. The harvest tree.
And we don't do Halloween decorations.
What do you hang on a fall tree?
So little pumpkins, like.
You just like they grow in nature.
Just like in nature, yeah. Well, they're not real, yeah. She put all kinds of stuff there. She posted to Instagram the picture of it.
Yeah.
And people were, there was a big response.
Oh, boy.
People were excited. I'd like to leave that tree up all year. Like, what I would like to do is
I've heard of people doing this. Valentine's
tree. Yeah. Let's just keep it
Arbor
up.
Arbor Day is just bare.
Yeah, exactly. Arbor Day is what it is. And the deal is, the real probably motivation is I don't have to put a tree up in the attic this way. But
it's in your room the whole day. It's taking up space in your house.
When we moved in this house, there were these, the guy had built shelves into this corner recessed area that's unusable for anything
else. And you
pull
the statue and it opens up into another.
Dude, I found the Constitution.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we removed those shelves and we have this sort of open area. We put a light
in
the
alcove.
Yeah. That you can't put anything else in.
Yeah.
And so the tree fits perfect. It's not intruding into the room at all.
Right.
You might as well keep on decorating it. But we now have put up Christmas.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know if now is too early, because, I mean, what is it? It's middle of November.
I mean, it's November. We had it up like November
15th. It's fine. Usually, a lot of people used to wait until, like, Thanksgiving was over.
Yeah.
And you would do it as a family, like, hey, we're all here. Let's trim the tree.
Here's why we can do it now. We're not hosting Thanksgiving. My brother is. So,
therefore,
we don't have to have the house ready for guests for that holiday. We could go ahead and start.
It's a great feeling, right? Be honest with me.
Well, it was a great feeling to go and turn on
Christmas.
Because
I know your brother listens sometimes. We don't want to say, like, sucker! But he is. He knows what he's in for.
Yeah, I mean, he was, yeah, yeah. It's very, I enjoy hosting Thanksgiving. Of course, last year was during COVID. We did it outside. I had the outside heaters and tables. It was actually really awesome on the deck. But, we'll be going up to
Cookville. It's a lovely home, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very lovely home.
Yeah. My brother's a builder.
He's a builder, so, yeah. He knows what he's doing.
Guys, isn't
homes.
That, I mean, the builder
Not a sponsor. Not a sponsor and won't be, but refused to be a sponsor. But.
So the question we had is from our wonderful Logan Lopez. And he was asking, when is it too early?
Yeah,
I think it's obviously a sliding scale. Yeah.
And it depends on how much of a Grinch you are.
Because we were talking off air, and you told me that you don't decorate for Christmas.
I don't decorate for Christmas.
And I was like, what?
Well, I don't have kids. It's a lot. But when the nieces come in, like the nieces sometimes come in and stay with us a few days after Christmas.
Yeah.
And we've decorated then a little bit, put up the tree, because there's something to put their presents under. And it just feels like if they show up and it's just, you know, Uncle Johnny and Aunt Curry's house is just a museum. Like, it feels very sterile compared to what their house would
be. But if you were home alone with your wife on Christmas morning, would you not want a tree where you had presents to each other?
No.
Do you buy presents for each other?
Sometimes.
We don't.
We've had a few years where we just don't do it anymore because we just buy each other things throughout
all
the year.
Yeah.
Or if we want something, we just go get it. That feels very spoiled to say, but it is. It's the reality.
But it is the reality.
Yeah.
Amazon has changed everything.
I just get emails randomly throughout the day like, oh, an order is on the way. Wonder what that was about.
Every day's Christmas.
And I have to click on it to see what my wife bought.
Or sometimes I can't remember what I bought.
I don't want to say, women be shopping, Johnny. Wow. Can I just say? Wow. That sounds like an 80s comic. Women be shopping. Yeah, I had a joke that I was trying to work on about that, about how, like, when I come home from the road and I see all the receipts, I'm like, I had no idea we were doing this well. Like, it's almost like a way to put a positive spin on it. Like, we're doing pretty good if you look at my wife's. But she's not really that big of a shopper. But every now and again, and I do it too.
I thought you were the bigger spender, yeah.
I'm a bigger spender than her, for sure.
Yeah.
And sometimes I try to get her to buy things, and she won't want them. Like, she did not want to replace her car. We just got her a car.
Right.
And she was like, no. I was like, well, I got a car. I want you to have a – you've had the same car for 7 years. Like,
yeah.
Aren't you – I want to get you one with, like, a backup camera and blind spot monitor. Like, she has no technology in her car, really.
Yeah.
And I'm like, she's like, but I like my car. And I'm like, this is so great that she doesn't, like, need it. But it makes me want to do it more because I'm a spender. I want to, like,
get
– and then her car started, like, burning oil. And you can't do anything when a car starts burning oil. Like, it means it's just – it's the beginning of the end.
Except put more oil.
You just keep changing the oil, like we talked about. I'm changing the oil right now.
Yeah.
So we just decided, like, pull the plug and – not the oil plug, but
pull the plug by an electric car and put in the
plug. She was kind of like, it was kind of like a sad, it was like a loss. She was like, oh, but now she's got the newer, it's not new, but it's new to her.
And it's pretty nice.
Like, yeah, it's a nice car. She was like, oh, this is pretty great.
Yeah.
So now she's, nice.
Cause I got to see it when you and her ran.
Oh, that's right. We ran the big race. The night. Which I won.
We sprinted at the end. By sprint,
I looked over at you.
And you looked at me. I knew it was coming. I was like, "Are we gonna do this?" I don't think you beat me.
I leaned. I did the.
Well, you're taller. That's not fair.
Yeah, I did the lean.
It was fun.
Well, I was already kind of hunched.
I mean, I was carrying. I wore a headlamp.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't stay on. It bounced right down over my neck. Yeah. So I was carrying it in my.
So you're
head.
Holding it. It felt like we were on like a coming of age movie where we're looking for the treasure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was actually potholes.
We're running from the bad guys. Yeah.
Puddles and potholes. I was like trying to keep you from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was good. And I didn't know, because I told you after, I was like, you could have just gone on. You're like, no, that was my pace.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't going on.
Because I was like, why is John, is he waiting on me? There was a weird tension there where I thought, is this happening all over again where John now feels like he needs to hang back with me?
I done told you, Johnny.
Okay.
I done told you.
Because you could have turned on the jets, I felt like, at any time.
I pulled a Michael Scott and. Before I left the house, because it's a night run.
You ate some linguine?
Yeah, I couldn't find anything at the house to eat, and so all we had was this leftover, like, chicken spaghetti stuff.
Oh, no.
And I was like, well, I guess I'll carb up a little bit. And, dude, it was like a rock sitting in my stomach. So I had a stitch most of the run.
Oh, really?
You know, and I just ran through it. But, no, that's my pace, right? I'm super not able.
Well, no, we're not slow. We were ahead of a lot of people, but it's a moderate.
But it's a minute slower than I used to run, like, a couple years ago. And I don't know why. Like,
old. We're old.
I'm not, though. I don't roll like that.
Oh.
I'm not going to call myself old at 42.
You mean denial. So... I don't really roll with gravity.
I'm just like,
I'm on a float.
I just think, I mean, I meet guys way older than me that run, like Andrew runs like 7 minute miles.
Yeah.
Used to until he hurt his
leg. But he's like 110 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'm not.
No.
No, and I'm not in the best shape right now. I'm not in the worst, but I'm close. So.
Even when I ride my bike, I realize like, I don't ride my bike as fast as my buddy does that rides with me. But, like, he's 140 pounds, 135 pounds.
Yeah.
And I'm tall. Like, I'm way up on my bike. I got this huge unicycle-looking bike because I have to have the long-legged frame.
Yeah.
And, or my knees will hit the handlebars. So I'm way up there. I'm just a bigger guy. Like, it is what it is. I've got some drag. You know? There's some wind. I'm like a sail going into the...
If you and your buddy were both physics problems,
right.
Like, it would come out to where you...
Yeah, you can't control for what the differences are. You can't be like person A and person B. It's like physics. Person A is just a different body person. Yeah. I don't know.
Interesting.
I'm not trying to let myself off the hook. I try to do as much as I can, but I'm just saying, like, you know, and he is in better shape than me, too. He does, like, 50-mile rides regularly. And I've done, like, a 30 a couple of times.
I don't think it's old, but I am in an age where I don't care about the pace. I mean, I notice
it. Just care
about
finishing.
Yeah, I want to finish.
Yeah.
If I start noticing it way, I'll still just run at that. I'm not going to stop.
Yeah.
And if I need to stop, I will. Like, you know, that's the thing. Like, that's – no, I didn't in that race. I probably could have walked
for a minute. Yeah, I was feeling it. I was like, I don't want to stop, but if I had been running by myself, I would have stopped at, like, mile two maybe and walked for a minute, then ran the last
Well, it's
mile.
Because of the spaghetti. Like, I run 3 miles usually.
It was mom's spaghetti.
Three to four times a week I'll run 3 miles.
It's like the Eminem song. Vomit on your sweater already.
But I was like, oh, man, yeah, normally, it was fine, but I had a really good time. It was a good event.
It was. It was fun, and the only thing was it had been raining, so, like, some of those places were a little bit, like, are we running in puddles and puddles? Like, am I going to snap my ankle off? You didn't know. The couple of terrain. Yeah. And there was not, like, a lot of support out there to be like, we got a man down. Like,
had him periodically posted. But, but it's, you know.
It's late. It's night. It's a night
running
run.
In the lights. I mean, it's, again, in case you guys don't know, you're running in this huge
light Christmas
light
parade.
Right?
Yeah.
That cars come and go through. It's out in Wilson County. It used to be over by Opryland.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
It was pretty cool.
So I recommend it. The Dancing Lights 5K. Do it next year with
and
us.
And it benefited CASA, right?
Yeah.
So that's huge. Court-appointed special advocates. It's something we raise money for here at the church as well. So, yeah. Pretty fun night.
And I won, so that was a medal for me.
Mm. One strong word.
Vanquished once again.
We
2-0. It's the way I see it. 20 years ago, and then last week.
Did you beat me in the half marathon?
We ran completely together on that.
Well, that's all we did. We did that here too. We literally ran across the finish line at the same time.
But I leaned.
So you're going to count that lean.
That half marathon was a fun one because you had never run that much before.
No.
I think the most you'd run was like eight.
Six.
Six or seven, yeah.
And I ran 13, yeah.
Yeah, and then you were like, I'm seeing spots. You told me, like, I'm seeing spots right now. I was like, oh, it's just because it's cold.
Yeah, and like, I couldn't lower my arms. We didn't stop.
You couldn't lower your arms?
Afterwards, I'd had them up running like this long. Like, when I got in the car, like, my arms were, it was such a, probably, again, good thing I was young. It'd be the kind of thing that at 42 might do some serious damage. But, yeah, 22 or whatever is like,
well,
whatever.
We'd made up our mind we wouldn't stop running.
And it was all hills.
Yeah, it was a lot of hills. It was Strawberry Plains, Tennessee.
Yeah.
And it was a cold day. It was 7 a.m. in February.
And I didn't have cold gear back then. Like, I was piecing together cold gear.
And that was the year I ran the full. I was training to run the full.
Wow.
So you were helping me out. I said, dude, run this with me and we'll whatever. And you go, okay, man.
Yeah.
And I didn't run the whole full. I mean, I walked some of the full. But I did finish.
Yeah.
It was not a great
time. The Nashville full? Is that the one you did that year?
Yeah, 2002.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm ever going to get up back to a full.
No,
or not.
I could see training to do a half again. Though.
I could do a half.
We should do it, man. Let's train.
I could do a half.
You know that ours is this weekend.
Well, Nashville. I'm not ready for that.
We've got it. We did 5K.
I thought that was an April run.
They've moved it all because of COVID. Yeah.
Yeah, like last year, probably about a year ago, I went out and ran 9 or 10 one day on a Saturday morning.
Yeah.
You know, like, so when I was really, you know, running 4 to 5, I can go run
running
usually.
Free.
So,
just
but. That's the last time I've run that far. I ran 6 back in September.
I didn't think I could do 6. I think I would just totally be done. I don't know. But, yeah, well, we could train, though. If you just take your time.
Yeah.
You just, you pace yourself.
Yeah.
And you have to do it. You have to get in that mode of, like, I'm going to run 4 miles and 5 miles. Every day you have to do something.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Then you got to take your rest day. And what I'm going to do is take a rest month from the 5K. Just have some bonbons.
Yeah, I'm really debating whether or not I keep trying. It's not even keto. It's just low carb. Just trying to make better decisions, you know. But the holidays, The
holidays are about carbs.
They put you into a mindset of what's the point, and that's a bad place to be.
I feel like we've opened up a discussion. We've made it okay for guys to actually admit out there that they think about carbs and their weight. Because I think for a long time, as we grew up, like it was always thought of as like only women think about diets and the way they look and the way they, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like your self-esteem being, we've either, like we are coming off as such beta males on our podcast over the last few years, or there's other people like us that are going, oh, I thought I was the only one that like thought, do I need to go on keto? Do I need to?
I mean, every guy I know.
Maybe it's just
about,
generational and it's become a thing now.
Like I'll meet these guys who they're just more naturally fit, you know, but for the most part, anybody in their 30s and 40s.
Naturally fit people really bother me.
Well, they're usually doing something about it.
No.
I do have one friend. He has like, I haven't exercised in 3 months.
Yeah.
And like, you can tell he's bigger, but even as bigger, he still has a six pack. And you're like, what the heck?
Infuriating.
Well, it's like, how's that possible? Like, yeah, the muscles moved out with.
Yeah, there's a comedian that's just this cut guy, big guy, and he's just got these shoulders. I'm just like, so you lift, right? Like I said, I started lifting the last couple of years, and it's like, but I don't even know. Like, what are you doing? He goes, I don't do anything. I was like, that makes me so mad.
Wow.
Like I feel so much better if he was like, I'm doing all this stuff more than you, and that's why I have this body.
Yeah.
But when he said, I'm not doing anything, I was like, so it's just not fair? The universe is just unfair then?
Yeah.
He is a vegan though, which surprised me.
Well, maybe that's what he's doing.
I don't know. Is it all nutrition? Abs are made in the kitchen. Is that what they say?
That's what they say. I tried to whip
my
some
buddy,
up.
My buddy Dustin Nickerson said, that's no help when I eat most of my meals in the car. Abs are made in the kitchen.
Oh, that's funny. You know, listener, maybe you're in the car.
Or the
kitchen.
Yeah.
And we thank you for the time you've given us today. Every week you join us, and we hear from you guys that you enjoy the time, and we do too. We wish we could just hear you talking back to your phone or computer.
Yeah, that would get old.
Yeah, probably.
Why don't you just let us do the talking?
Pipe down, guys. We got this covered. So, but we actually would love to hear from you in other ways. You can go to our website.
Talkaboutthatpodcast.com.
You can go there and become a patron if you like on our Patreon page, or you can check out ways to contact us, send us more questions. Maybe we'll talk about Christmas decorations for your question in whatever the equivalent would be.
Sure.
Yeah.
New Year's decorations?
Yeah.
Don't you think we should do more for New Year's? People do fireworks sometimes.
It's because everybody's drained after Christmas.
We're over it.
And my birthday falls right in between.
Yeah, your Christmas birthday.
It's like a super holiday week. And in 1 week, I go to Christmas, birthday, and New Year's. It's like I get all my holidays out.
I'm getting you one present, and that's it.
Yeah. If that. Most people don't even remember. They're like...
You know, I've already got your present.
You got me a present?
Oh, yeah. I've got you.
You don't have to get me a present.
I've had it for months, and I've just
been waiting. Is the expectation now that I get you a present?
Well, look.
Did I get you a present? I thought I did.
One of your books, probably.
Here you go, buddy. I signed it.
Hey, look here. Galley copy. Look at that. It's got errors. So maybe worth more.
Good luck not reading it. That's funny. Hey, you have an Audible account now, you said.
Oh, I'm excited.
Have you listened to Not So Black and White, the audiobook?
Oh, maybe. Is it on there?
Dude, we spent 3 weeks.
But I don't know if it's in the, because I'm in the like Plus membership, not in the Premier. So you can't just pick what you want. It's got to be in that group.
Oh, you might have to pay for it a little bit, Johnny.
Well.
I'll give you some money.
No, I'll do
it. I'll Venmo you.
Because it's you and Reggie reading.
Me and Reggie reading.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
NotSoBlackAndWhiteBook.com if you want to get your copy.
Yeah. If you haven't left me a rating, if you've got the book and haven't left a rating, man, go to Amazon. The ratings are
not
still
the book. Leave John a rating.
All right, just me. Now go check out, the Amazon page. And it's pretty exciting. People are
talking.
We're going to be in a pretty major podcast we record next week. I'll tell you guys about it later. It doesn't come out till next year, but like it's a huge podcast. So it's an exciting interview coming up.
Bigger than this podcast, John?
Just a bit. Just a skosh.
Well, we'll catch them. We'll get there.
I don't know if we'll
catch
this
one. With your
help,
listener.
That's right. but you can also check out Johnny's comedy specials. Check out Johnny on social media. Follow him on Instagram. And certainly go give a rating on his dry bar special. That really helps him out.
Do that.
Yeah. And it's really good stuff. He's writing new stuff right now. He was chilling me at lunch, and it was really good. So he stood up on the table and did stand-up, and the whole restaurant applauded. I couldn't
believe it. They didn't want it. It was a very...
Yeah, they asked him to leave.
It was like that moment in Good Morning Vietnam where they're stuck in the row of trucks, and he stands up in the back of the truck and just starts doing stand-up for the soldiers waiting.
Yeah.
Except it wasn't that. It was people trying to eat their bread,
right,
and I wouldn't shut up with my dumb jokes.
Yeah, and it was...
And they're like, we'll ask you to leave, sir.
Yeah. Just like the movie, but
with
those minor differences. Yeah. So, yeah. It was fun. So look forward to new content from him as well. You can follow him to hear something funny every day. Love that, Johnny. He's a funny guy.
Oh, John.
So, but you got so much more depth than just funny, Johnny. You're more than just a funny guy. No, I'm just a funny guy. That's it. Pretty shallow.
I've made peace with it.
Well, guys, thanks for listening, and we'll look forward to doing it again next week on
Talk About That.
Our world can feel chaotic and uncertain, but we don't have to live enslaved to fear. Christ has promised me and you his peace, and throughout Scripture has provided powerful tools and practical steps to help us experience greater freedom. I'm Jennifer Slattery, lead host of the Faith Over Fear podcast, inviting you to join me and my team as together we learn how to starve our fears and feed our faith. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com or wherever you access podcast content.